righteous. The right hand of the Lord doeth valiantly. The right hand of the Lord is exalted. The right hand of the Lord doeth valiantly.
Amen.
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 Okay, and again, we thank thee, for thou hast read the opening prayer. Good evening, and in some cases, it's still afternoon where you're listening to me. So if I say Shabbat Shalom, it's for those for whom the evening has come. Shabbat Shalom for those of you to whom it is relevant. Chag Sameach to all of you. It's the festival time, and for some of you, it's already the sixth day of the festival has begun, which is also the weekly Sabbath. And as I said, some of you are listening out west, in western United States where the sun has not yet set. You know, one of the terms for a holiday, holy day in the Bible is Yom Tov, a good day. A Yom Tov, a good day. You find that, I believe, in the book of Esther. A Yom Tov, a good day. So Yiddish-speaking Jews used to call a holiday a Yontif. And they would tell one another in Yiddish, Gut Yontif, on a holiday, on a holy day. So if you would bump into Pope Francis during this week, you would say, Gut Yontif, Pontiff. Now I would like all of you to engage in an activity as we enter the Sabbath and we enter this sixth day of the festival. Do you have pencil or pen and paper out there in electronic land? I would like you to take a number from 1 to 10, and don't tell your neighbor, don't tell me. Take a number from 1 to 10, all right? Now multiply it by 2. Now add 10. Take that number out, multiply it by 2, add 10. All right, now divide by 2. Okay, now subtract your original number. Subtract your original number. And your answer is 5. Yep. Isn't that fascinating? And so you'll want to tune in again tomorrow because you learned so much from these messages. When God shows his love in the Bible, he often uses his love in multiples of 5. Think of the English 5-letter word grace, G-R-A-C-E. And so we have the 5 books of the law, God's original revelation to human beings in written form is in the 5 books or the Pentateuch, coming from Greek or in Hebrew Chumash, the Chumash, or the Pentateuch. The 5 books of Moses, as they're called, or the 5 books of the Torah. And you can take that theme and work with it. There are 5 books of the Psalms. The Jewish tradition is that Ezra organized the Psalms in that way. And also, if you think about it, really Psalm 145 is like the conclusion of the book. So you have 5 extra Psalms at the end that are kind of an appendix, and they fit in with the themes of the first 5 books. In other words, Psalm 146 fits in with Genesis and with the first book of Psalms. Psalm 147 fits in with Exodus and the second book of Psalms, etc. See what I'm saying? So you have the 5 books of the law, the 5 books of the Psalms, and then the 5 Psalms at the end of the book of Psalms. And then beyond that, you have the 5 Megillot, the 5 festival scrolls, that are in the Hebrew Bible in order based on the seasons when they are read. So you have the Song of Songs, Shir HaShirim, or as it's called in the Old King James, Canticles. And we contemporary types in English call it the Song of Solomon. Then that's for the spring festival season. Then we have, for the late spring, we have the Book of Ruth for Pentecost. And then for Midsummer, we have the Book of Lamentations. And then for this time of the year, we have Ecclesiastes. And then for the winter, for the last month of the year, a month before Passover, we have the book of Esther, the Megillah. The Megillah is usually, when people talk about the Megillah, they talk about the book of Esther. or the Megillah, as it's called in Yiddish and in American parlance, it's called the Megillah. There was even a cartoon character called Megillah Gorilla. I didn't watch the program, but there were some of you as children might have watched Megillah Gorilla. Anyway, so you have the Bible organized in that way in fives, and so I have been focusing at the end of a sabbatical year on the law, this particular festival. I've been basing my talks from the five books of the law because many of you have read through the entire Pentateuch through the course of this year, as it is a sabbatical year. Now it's ended, but as I said, you'll find that if you are keeping the feast in Jerusalem, as some of you who are watching this are probably watching it after the feast, having come back from Jerusalem, and you notice that when you were there at the end of the festival, on the eighth day of sacred assembly, people were gathering together and various celebrities were reading out of the book of Deuteronomy in obedience to Deuteronomy 31, which I've covered before. So I want to go now to 1 Corinthians 14 as just one example of how God does things in multiples of five when he shows his love. 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 19. Here Paul says to the Corinthians, you know, why should you in effect rant on in a language people can't understand? For example, if I knew Chinese, what good would it do most of you if I gave my sermon in Chinese? So he says, yet in the church, 1 Corinthians 14:19, I would rather speak five words with my understanding that I may teach others also than 10,000 words in a tongue. So he uses the multiple of five, and he says, I would rather speak five words with my understanding that I may teach others also than 10,000 words in a tongue. So he wants to teach and to edify, and he talks about five words in that symbolism there. So I'm going back to the five books of the law, and I'm going to the fifth book, Deuteronomy, tonight. And I call this talk, Reminders Before the Reward. Reminders before the reward. They were about to enter the promised land. They're about to become a nation with boundaries and, you know, laws and land and all the institutions of a country. They had been wandering as an ethnic group in the wilderness. Now they were going to enter a land and become the masters of the land. So before doing that, Moses did a Deuteronomy, a second law, a repetition of the law. That's what it means in Greek. The second law, the repetition of the law, or in Hebrew, Mishneh Torah. However, it's normally called by the first important word in the book. And I want to comment on that. In the ancient Middle East, particularly, I'm talking now about Iraq and in the Mesopotamian region, in that part of the ancient world, a famous book would be called by the first key word in the book. And so when Hebrew speakers talk about the Pentateuch, they call the first book the book of Bereshit, in the beginning. They refer to it as the book of Bereshit, in the beginning. And the second book is called Ve'ele HaShemot, and these are the names. Or they just call it the book of Shemot, the book of names. That's how it begins. The third book, if you look at Leviticus, it's in God called to Moses, and so they call it Vayikra, the book of and he called. You follow what I'm saying? And then the book of Numbers, let me go to Numbers 1:1. In the beginning of the book of Numbers, it says, now the Eternal spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai. So they call the book Bamidbar, in the wilderness. That's how they talk about, that's how Hebrew speakers refer to the book of Numbers. They refer to it as the book of Bamidbar, in the wilderness. And then the last book of the Pentateuch, and these are the words which Moses spoke to all Israel. And so they call it Ve'ele HaDvarim, or the book of Devarim, the book of words. So the Pentateuch, the titles of the books, I learned this from a friend back in 1970. The titles of the books give you the biography of a Christian. First you have Bereshit, in the beginning. Everybody has a heritage, an origin. You know, you have a genealogy. You have roots. And then it says, then the next book is the book of names. So now we have your individual identity. First there's your roots, there's your genealogy, and then there's you. You have a name. These are the names. And then Vayikra, and he called. So then God chooses you, calls you. And then Bamidbar, so you're in the wilderness. Once God calls you, then you're in the wilderness. You're going through life on the way to the promised land. And how do you get to the promised land? By following Devarim, the words of God. So you're in the wilderness following Devarim, the words of God. And so, as I said, the biography of a Christian is told in the titles of the first five books of the law. So I said, it's something I learned from a friend back in 1970. So I want to go to some of what Moses had to say in the fifth book of the Pentateuch, the book of Devarim or Deuteronomy. And one thing he mentions is that Israel was supposed to be an example, a model nation. Of course, he told them that back in Exodus 19. But they were to be the example. And they were placed in the middle of the world in a way. They were placed in an important position where they were between Egypt and Babylon, where they were on the Mediterranean Sea coast. And Mediterranean means center of the earth. So Israel is in a way in the middle of the world. And it's where Asia, Europe, and Africa come together. So he put them in an important position. He didn't isolate them in some area very, very remote, difficult to get to for other people. He didn't put them like in, you know, up in Nepal or someplace that would be very hard to find, or maybe the islands of Polynesia. You know, he put them in an area where other peoples would come in contact with them. And they were supposed to be an example. In Deuteronomy 4, he says, "Now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the judgments which I teach you to observe, that you may live and go in and possess the land which the eternal God of your fathers is giving you. You shall not add to the word which I command you, nor take from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Eternal your God which I command you." There's a great tendency not only to drop things, but also some people want to get overzealous, and they add a lot of things, and they make it a burden. "Your eyes have seen what the Eternal did at Baal Peor." Remember, we talked about that last night. "For the Eternal your God has destroyed from among you all the men who followed Baal of Peor." Right, that was the plague that God instituted to punish the fornication and idolatry of Israel at that time, which I read about last night. "But you who held fast the Eternal your God are alive today, every one of you. You held fast, you cleaved unto the Eternal." Probably the Old King James says, "You have cleaved," or whatever the grammar is in the Old King James language. But anyway. But you who have held fast to the Eternal your God are alive, every one of you. "Surely I have taught you statutes and judgments, just the Eternal my God commanded me, that you should act according to them in the land which you go to possess. Therefore be careful to observe them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples, who will hear all these statutes and say, 'Surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people.'" When they see the condition of your country living under God's law, it'll be example to them, and they'll want to do the same. "For what great nation is there that has God so near to it as the Eternal our God is to us, for whatever reason we may call upon him? And what great nation is there that has such statutes and righteous judgments as are in all this law which I set before you this day?" So they were to be an example. And the church today should be an example. If we are a community, we should be a community that sets a right example. And he says, "Only take heed to yourself and diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life, and teach them to your children and your grandchildren." So we have a way of life to transmit, to pass on to future generations, of course, which is also very critical. In verse 35, he reminds us that the Bible is strictly monotheistic. Deuteronomy 4:35. "To you it was shown that you might know Ata hareta ladat. To you it was shown that you might know. Ki Adonai, hu ha Elohim, ein od milvado. That the Eternal Himself is God, there is none other besides Him. Then, later on, Moses reviewed for them the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, the basic moral code of that society, the basic moral code of humankind, given supernaturally in a great theophany from Mount Sinai. In Deuteronomy, the fifth chapter, he repeats what was given to them in Exodus 20. And then he expounds them for about 30 chapters afterwards. In order to get a sense of how to organize Deuteronomy, think of it as expounding on each of these 10 commandments, a few chapters each on each one. And then you'll get a sense of what's going on. Until you get to around chapter 30, and then you have Moses' final exhortation and prophecy at the end of the book. And Moses called all Israel and said to them, Hear, O Israel, the statutes and judgments which I speak in your hearing today, that you may learn them and be careful to observe them. The Eternal our God made a covenant with us in Horeb. Remember that Israel made an agreement. This will be our constitution. Your divine law will be the constitution of the nation. It will be a theocracy. The Eternal did not make this covenant with our fathers, but with us, those who are here today, all of us who are alive. You know, of course, one generation died out, but their children were there and then grew up to be adults, and now they're going to enter the land. The Eternal talked with you face to face on the mountain from the midst of the fire. So we have Aseret HaDibrot, the 10 utterances. And they're called the 10 utterances because they are unique, because God spoke them directly so the people would get the word directly from God to them. Other laws, you know, God commanded Moses, Moses commanded Israel, but these, you know, the people were there gathered around near Mount Sinai, and they had all these signs, and they heard these words, so they were the 10 utterances. And they were not the 10 suggestions. They really were 10 commandments, as I'll show you in a moment. Moses says, The Eternal talked with you face to face on the mountain from the midst of the fire. I stood between the Eternal and you at that time to declare to you the word of the Eternal, for you were afraid because of the fire, and you did not go up to the mountain. He said, and this is what he directly said, and these are commandments and recognized as such, and they're recognized as such in the New Testament. The Ten Commandments are recognized in the New Testament. I want to go to the book of Ephesians, the sixth chapter. And here Paul is writing to a Gentile congregation. This is in Ephesus, Greek-speaking world, Asia Minor, what is today Turkey. And he says in Ephesians 6, he says, Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. He quotes directly from the Ten Commandments. And he says, which is the first commandment with promise. He says, it's in the commandments, and it's the first one with promise. If you read the Ten Commandments, this is one which goes on to say, as he says in verse 3, that it may be well with you, and you may live long on the earth. So he quotes the commandment, quotes the promise. Now remember what he says. He says, obey your parents in the Lord. So obviously, if your parents, there was a book called Oliver Twist, right, where these children were gathered together and taught how to be pickpockets. You know, it was a movie called Oliver.
Yeah.
Okay.
Musical.
You know, and Fagin would sing in this minor mode, you've got to pick a pocket or two. You know, I remember that. Well, anyway, obviously, if your parents teach you to be a pickpocket, you don't obey, because it's in the Lord. You obey your parents in the Lord. But he goes on to say, and you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. You know, so obviously, as parents, you don't want to tease your kids wrongly, abuse them, you know, and be so oppressive and overbearing. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. So in a balanced way, you work with them, and you nurture them, and you rear them, and you train them And it says in the training and admonition of the Lord. So not your own philosophies. I'm sure you have your own ways of doing things, and that's fine. But the basic code, how they behave, should come from the Bible. Then whatever, you know, each family has its own, I realize, its own way of doing things too. But it ought to be your morality, your ethics ought to be biblically grounded, of course. Okay, so these are the Ten Commandments, and if you study the writings of Josephus, you'll see that that's how they were understood at that time. Now, the Jews had a certain agenda, so now they're dividing up the Ten Commandments in a different way, and the introduction has become commandment number one. The Catholic Church has its agenda, so they take thou shalt not covet and divide it into two parts, you know, so that they can divide the commandments in such a way as to kind of gloss over the fact that the and this is where I disagree with Catholicism. One of many points is that there's a tremendous amount of statuary and iconography in both the Greek Orthodox Church and the Roman Catholic Church. There's a lot of statuary and iconography, and it really, you know, it's not the way we ought to worship God. But in the Catholic Ten Commandments, the graven images one is kind of subsumed, so it's not quite as emphasized, and they divide thou shalt not covet into two parts. All right, so I would say, I would recommend, if you're dividing up the Ten Commandments, you do it the way mainstream, you know, generally Protestants do it, you know, and then you should learn them, you should know them, you should be able to roll out of bed and recite them, you know. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not, you know, make a graven image and use it in worship. Shouldn't take the name of the Eternal, your God, in vain. Remember the Sabbath. Keep it holy, right? Honor your father and your mother. You know, you shall not kill. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear faultless witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet. Now, I hope you can all do that out there the way I just did it. You don't have to. I mean, I don't mean, you know, exactly the way I said it and in my accent. You know, if you want to do it in a southern drawl, y'all can, you know, you can do it that way, you know. But you should know them. You should know them, okay? And I want to now go and do what Moses did here. He reviewed them, and he said, the introduction, I am the Eternal your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth, for purposes of worship, if you keep reading, okay? You shall not bow down to them, nor serve them. For I, the Eternal your God, am a jealous God, and visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. That's a passage I should take more time with at another time. But showing mercy to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not take the name of the Eternal your God in vain, for the Eternal will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Now that doesn't mean you can't repent of it. He's just trying to tell you, this may be a small matter to you, but it isn't to God, because he wants you to have great reverence and awe for God. And even the very name of God ought to be something that you highly respect and don't take lightly. So he doesn't consider you guiltless if you take his name in vain, even though in society right now it is quite common. Observe the Sabbath day. Oh, so this is a different wording. Back in Exodus, he said, remember the Sabbath day. They had been taught the Sabbath in Exodus 16 when the manna fell and a double portion fell on the sixth day, and then on the Sabbath it didn't come. So they were already prepared about the Sabbath. And he says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy as the Eternal your God commanded you. He's reminding them of that. Well, here he says, observe it. I'm sorry. Here he says, observe it. But he was reminding them. They were told before to remember it. Now he says, observe it. Observe it. Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy as the Eternal God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Eternal your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your ox, nor your donkey, nor any of your cattle, nor the stranger who is within your gates, that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. This is a different thrust than in Exodus 20. So I want to go back to Exodus 20, verses 8 to 11. And there you see the Sabbath as a memorial of the creation of the world for human beings. And God's plan of salvation begins with the creation of the world and then finally with the creation of human beings. And so then he rests on the Sabbath. And so in Exodus 20, in verse 8, It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days. Well, let me jump to verse 11. That's the key there. Exodus 8:11. For in 6 days the Eternal made the heaven and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Eternal blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. And that goes back to Genesis 2, if you read the first three verses there. And so what you find is that when you keep the Sabbath, you're acknowledging, I worship the God who reveals himself in this collection of material here. I worship the God of the Bible. I worship Yahweh, the God of Israel, who is really the God of all the universe. But he revealed himself first to the patriarchs and to the people of Israel, and inspired these words. This is the God you're acknowledging when you keep the Sabbath day. And here in Deuteronomy 5, though, there's a different thrust to the Sabbath day. You should rest, and your people that work for you should rest, and you should understand the value of freedom, of not being a slave, where you have to work all the time, and you cannot rest. Somebody else is always your boss, and you don't have any, you know, time to yourself. You know, so it's a little different thrust, the concept of rest and freedom, liberation. Look at verse 15. And remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Eternal your God brought you out from there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Eternal your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. So you keep it for two reasons, remembering creation and remembering your liberation from bondage in Egypt. And so, as I said, it's a type of the rest we have in Jesus Christ. When you have accepted Jesus Christ, you're free from the penalty of sin, and you're free from bondage to sin, to Satan and his demons in this world. You're liberated, you're emancipated. And so the Sabbath reminds you of that from week to week. Then he says, honor your father and your mother as the Eternal your God has commanded you. So he reminds them, you know, because it goes back to Exodus 20, that your days may be long and that it may be well with you in the land which the Eternal your God is giving you. Obviously, a society is far more stable if people are honoring their parents. If there isn't a generation gap or generation conflict, it's a much more disruptive society if there isn't a stable relationship, respect for parents among the younger generation. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. And of course, these are written in the singular. It's not if you have an old King James, it's thou shalt not. It's each individual. Thou shalt not. Thou shalt not do these things. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet. Seven, you know, completely. There's 7 points here. Don't covet anything that's your neighbor's. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, and you shall not desire your neighbor's house, his field, his male servant, his female servant, his ox, his donkey, or anything that is your neighbor's. And he goes on to say this in verse 22. These words the Eternal spoke to all your assembly in the mountain from the midst of the fire, the cloud, and the thick darkness with a loud voice. And he added no more. So this was the basic code. He didn't get all complex about it. These are the basic principles that order civilization. And he wrote them on 2 tablets of stone and gave them to me. And look at verse 29. Oh! That they had such a heart in them that they would hear me and always keep all my commandments, that it might be well with them and with their children forever. Deuteronomy 5:29. If only people had that attitude that they really wanted to do this, and if they only had the attitude of not wanting to do wrong and wanting to do right, it would be a blessing to them. Well, what's the solution? Well, the solution is a reunion with God spiritually. The solution is receiving God's spirit, having a new heart and a new mind. So Jeremiah 31:31 promises that. And Hebrews 8 and Hebrews 10 explains that from a New Testament perspective. The new covenant brings us the spirit of God, so we have the right attitude that they didn't have, unfortunately, because they were a carnal nation. They were not en masse converted. Individuals of them were, but the nation as a whole was not. Now, as I said, Deuteronomy then expounds on these commandments. So the first one is, You shall have no other gods before me. And so you go to Deuteronomy 6, and that's what's going on there. Verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Eternal, our God, Yahweh, our God, Yahweh is one, or Yahweh is our God, Yahweh is one, or you could translate it, Yahweh is our God, Yahweh alone. So, the God who gave these words is the one God, the only God. And then it goes on to say in verse 5, you shall love the Yahweh your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. So that is really a basis for morality, being accountable, loving God and wanting to serve him, because he certainly has our best interests at heart. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. The Hebrew word indicates repetition or grinding them in, you know. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house. So it's not a matter of like a formal class. It's a part of your life. As you go through life, questions come up, situations come up. And so when situations come up, biblical principles are expounded. It's not like you get up on your high horse and preach sermons to your children, but as you go through life, situations come up and you have opportunities to discuss things, and your discussion is based on biblical principles. It says you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. It ought to be a part of your culture, a part of your way of life, a part of what you talk about. It ought to be, you know, on your mind. And, you know, as I said, this is very critically important. And I want to go now to the 10th chapter of Deuteronomy. And in verse 12, he also summarizes this point, that you ought to have the spiritual as your priority. That will really help keep you focused, you know, guided the way you need to go, like that compass that points in the right direction. Deuteronomy 10:12. And now, Israel, what does the Eternal your God require of you but to fear the Eternal your God? In other words, to have an attitude of wanting to obey, reverence. Fear the Eternal your God, to walk in all his ways, and to love him, to serve the Eternal your God with all your heart and with all your soul. In fact, I'm going to go one more line, one more verse. And to keep the commandments of the Eternal and his statutes, which I command you today for your good. God loves us so much. You know what he did for us. You know what Jesus Christ did for us. And so, you know, we love him in return. And we know that what he tells us to do is for our own good. I had not planned to turn there, but I'm going to go ahead and turn to 1 John, the 4th chapter. First John 4 and verse 19. In ancient Israel, in the ancient times, Israel could see that God had intervened, brought them out of slavery dramatically, subduing the greatest empire of the day with plagues. He brought them across the Red Sea, drowned the Egyptian army. He sustained them in the wilderness. And so in response to this love of God, Israel then could return that love. We see an even greater example of God's love in the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. And then we as Christians return that love to God. 1 John 4:19, we love him because he first loved us. The very act of creation was an act of love. The wanting to share existence with other beings and then wanting to share eternity with us as his children was, of course, a great act of love. I'd like now to go to Deuteronomy 8. Oh, well, first I want to go to Mark, the Gospel of Mark, because what I read to you in Deuteronomy 6, this is the passage I just read to you, although I didn't read the entire passage. But Deuteronomy 6, I read to you the 4th verse, the 5th verse. I read to you the 6th verse. I think I went as far as verse 7. I went as far as verse 7 through verse through verse 9, that passage, Deuteronomy 6, 4 to 9, is in a sense the most critically important passage in Judaism. And particularly Deuteronomy 6, 4 is in effect the creed of Judaism. And Deuteronomy 6, 4 and 5 represents the essence of that way of life. And so Jesus Christ coming in the first century as a rabbi, if he would have been asked, what's the chief law of the Bible, he would have gone to that verse. Then he would have, of course, gone on and quoted Leviticus 19:18, because if you love God, you're going to love your fellow human beings. God expects you to treat other people the way you'd want to be treated, you know, what we call the golden rule, which you find in Matthew 7:12. So if you love God, you're going to love your fellow human beings. So the basic rule of life is love of God, love of neighbor, unselfish outgoing concern towards God and towards your fellow human beings. And so in Mark 12, we find that when Jesus is questioned, that's what he says. He goes back to Deuteronomy 6, 4, and 5. He goes back to that passage, which is called by the Jews the Shema. It starts with that word, Hear, O Israel, Shema Yisrael. And so it's called the Shema, that passage. In Mark 12 and verse 28. Then one of the scribes came, and having heard them reasoning together, perceiving that he had answered them well, asked him, which is the first commandment of all? Well, I guess he was kind of testing him because, and of course he got the right answer. Now there's some humor in this. Last night I talked about a female donkey arguing with its owner, who was a prophet, and the prophet arguing back. It's really silly on one level. It makes you want to laugh, at least in my case. And this is also silly on a certain level. Anyway, Jesus answered him, the first of all the commandments is, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. By the way, there's a lot in that passage that maybe at another time I'll get into. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, with all your mind and with all your strength. This is the first commandment. A very brilliant Greek theologian brought out to us one time that he has embellished the verse. Well, he gave the verse. He ought to know what it means, right? And he embellishes the verse here. He goes on to say, serve the eternal your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. But he adds, with all your mind. So we need to discipline our mind and serve God with our mind. That's very important. You know, as you think, so are you, as it says in Proverbs, in so many words, you know. You are what you think. Now, maybe you could say physically, in a certain sense, you are what you eat. But as far as your essential person, you are what you think. So you need to serve God with all your mind. That kind of reminds me to turn to 2 Corinthians 10, so I'll go there. You know, my techie is probably thinking, well, he's going wild. But, you know, sometimes you're inspired to turn to a verse that you didn't give to the techie at first. All right, 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 5. Casting down, this is 2 Corinthians 10, 5. Casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. You want to discipline your mind so that you are on the right track mentally, intellectually, philosophically. That's 2 Corinthians 10, 5. And so that's the thought here. But he was giving what we call in Hebrew a midrash on the verse. So he was explaining the verse in such a way that this scholar would understand. And then he goes on to say this. I'm reading now in verse 30. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. This is the first commandment. And the second, like it, is this. So he equates this. Because if you love God, you're going to love your fellow human beings. And second, like it, is this. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these. So the scribe said to him, Well said, teacher. You have spoken the truth. For there is one God, and there is no other but he. And to love him with all the heart, with all the understanding, with all the soul, and with all the strength, and to love one's neighbor as oneself, is more than all the whole burnt offerings and sacrifices. Now, as I said, you could burst out laughing, Because you go to God and say, you know, what's religion all about? And God tells you, and you say, oh, well said. You really know your stuff. You know, it's so ridiculous on one level. You see what I'm saying? But I like to see the humor in these passages. All right. Anyway, you understand what I'm not taking away from the passage, but you have to see the humor in there too. What Jesus Christ was thinking as this was going on. Now, he was so humble, he probably wasn't thinking that way. But what would somebody else think? Do you know who you're talking to? Somebody else would think, right? All right, anyway. You know, it's like going up to a professional baseball player and saying, you want to know how to hold the bat? You know, it reminds me of a movie. My children have all seen all these Disney movies from the 70s that I guess nobody else watched. But we would be an empty theater, but we'd be enjoying it. But anyway, there's a movie where there's a professional golfer and a comedian who's playing the part of a college dean who doesn't know anything about golf. He thinks he's good at golf, but he isn't. So the professional golfer is about to tee off, and he says, "You're not holding the club just right," you know, and he begins to correct him. And the guy's thinking, you know, oh, what's going on here, you know. The children remember that, right? Yeah, okay. So that's kind of what this passage reminds me of. But anyway, all right, moving on now. Now, when Jesus saw that he answered wisely, he said to him, "You are not far from the kingdom of God." You know, you're on the right track. You know, we agree. We see eye to eye on this. "You're not far from the kingdom of God," he said. But after that, no one dared question him. You know, so they knew he was sharp. He knew his stuff. He wasn't getting, you know, he knew what to say. So they stopped badgering him, because in many cases, the questioning of him was to, in effect, try to undermine him. And they weren't getting anywhere, so they stopped. All right. But you see that the New Testament teaches this same principle that you see in Deuteronomy. It's consistent, you know, through the Bible, obviously. The same author gave us the entire Bible. You find that in Ecclesiastes, which I'll talk about, I hope to talk about tomorrow. So I'll leave that for tomorrow. Well, I'll say for later today. You know, later on the Sabbath. It's tomorrow in American culture, but it's later this day in Hebrew culture. Okay, now I want to go to Deuteronomy, the 8th chapter, and I read some of this the other day, and so I want to go a little bit further into it, and I'll go to verse 10. Now, as we understand, the wilderness experience was to teach them to rely on God to go from emancipation all the way to the promised land. And when, as we keep this Festival of Tabernacles, we're supposed to learn, you know, that we rely on God to get us through this life to the reward ahead. And in Deuteronomy 8 in verse 10, he says, "When you have eaten and are full, then you shall bless the Eternal your God for the good land which he has given you." So be grateful for the blessings that you have. And many times people tend to take for granted after a while what they have, and they forget, you know, even on the human level. You know, for example, right now I'm speaking in a building that somebody had to put together. We're using electricity that somebody's maintaining, and on it goes. We ate food that somebody prepared and all the rest of it. You know, sometimes we tend to get so wrapped up in what we're in our own importance, we forget how dependent we are on other people. And then on the other hand, think how dependent we are on God. We depend upon God for every breath of every breathe and every beat of our heart. Anyway, he says, "Beware that you do not forget the Eternal your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments and his statutes, which I command you today, lest when you have eaten and are full and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, And when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up, and you forget the Eternal your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage." One thing that's good about studying American history is to realize the struggles and the challenges involved in building up the beautiful, prosperous, very powerful country that we... Now we're beginning to see it in some way slip away, but, you know, it's still, you know, the richest and freest and most powerful country on earth. But it took a lot to get there. You know, there were a lot of challenges and struggles along the way. And people tend to forget that. That's one good reason why you come to a place like Washington, D.C. and to review the history. And he says, when your heart is lifted up and you forget the Eternal, your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led you through that great and terrible wilderness in which were fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty land where there was no water, who brought water for you out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do you good in the end. He wanted you to build the character that was needed to be the great nation he wanted you to be. That required going through that experience. We have to go through life in the same way and build character in the process. And that's all we take with us when we die, is our character. We take nothing else. Then you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. And you, that's not the right attitude. And you're totally dependent on God. A little bacteria, a little germ could put you out. You know, something you can't even see could be the end of you in the next moment, for all you know. Verse 18, and you shall remember the Eternal your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he swore to your fathers as it is this day. Then it shall be, if you by any means forget the Eternal your God and follow other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that you shall surely perish. That people had a special mission, and if they were not going to fulfill that mission, it was going to be self-destructive. And it is really true of any nation. Let me go to Proverbs 14. Any nation that loses its morality eventually will self-destruct. Proverbs 14:34 is where I want to go. Proverbs 14:34. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. So any nation which becomes a rogue nation, they are heading for trouble. Verse 20. Let's go back to verse 19 and 20. I'll read them together. Then it shall be, this is Deuteronomy 8:19 and 20. Then it shall be, if you by any means forget the Eternal your God and follow other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that you shall surely perish. As the nations which the Eternal destroys before you, so you shall perish, because you would not be obedient to the voice of the Eternal your God. You've seen the example of these other nations that you have replaced, because they were so foul and wretched. You know, I in effect spewed them out of the land. And so you remember that, and you set the right example. And don't get caught up in your own power and wealth and think that it's because you're so special. So we have to be very careful about that, you know. God warned the church in Laodicea about that attitude. These were people who were in the very church of God. You know, so they had a relationship with God through Jesus Christ. They were the church, and yet they were very arrogant about themselves. And they figured they had it made spiritually. They evidently looked down on others and began to forget what really the purpose was of their calling. They were kind of wrapped up in how successful their church was, you know, and they began to lose sight of very important values. There are various ways that comes out in a congregation. Sometimes it comes out in very lax behavior. Sometimes it comes out in very rigid, self-righteous behavior, and usually it's a combination of the two. That's what's so interesting. Congregations that are Laodicean are going to be really zealous for some things and really lax about other things, you know, and it's not going to even be consistent there. Because once you become vulnerable spiritually, you can go off in various directions, either towards extreme rigidity or extreme laxness. And as I said, what tends to happen is you combine the two together. This is my experience. This is what I've seen. This is what I've lived through. This is what I had to repent of personally. All right. So enough said on that. I want to go to Deuteronomy 30. Deuteronomy 30 and verse 19. So this is the choice that Moses gives to the people. As I said, he has now expounded on the Ten Commandments. Now he goes into the several chapters of exhortation and prophecy, and then a wrap up at the end where it talks about how he gives the Bible to the priests and he goes in to die there on Mount Nebo. So we're now wrapping up the book. So we go to Deuteronomy 30 and verse 19, and he says, I call heaven and earth.
Hold on, we lost you.
Okay.
Go back to your address in Deuteronomy 30.
Okay. I'm now reintroducing Deuteronomy 30. This is, you heard of the second law. This is the second recitation of introducing Deuteronomy 30. Okay. I'm now getting into my peroration here. I'm talking about Moses' final words here. And so in Deuteronomy 30:19, Moses says, I call heaven and earth to witness today against you that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. So what does Moses say? Therefore choose life that both you and your descendants may live. So he tells them, please choose life. I've shown you the way that's going to lead to life. So please choose it. That you may love the eternal your God, that you may obey him, his voice, that you may cling to him, for he is your life and the length of your days, and that you may dwell in the land which the eternal swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give them, and in the spiritual sense, that you may ultimately dwell in the world in tomorrow, in the awesome age ahead, in the millennium, as resurrected saints, as kings and priests in that world, and then dwell in the New Jerusalem ultimately. And so we conclude then by going to Matthew, the sixth chapter. As we come to the passage known as the Sermon on the Mount, it summarizes this same attitude, and it's the reason why we gather together for these festival seasons. Matthew 6 and verse 33, breaking into the thought. Okay, Matthew 6:33, as we break into the thought, and evidently we had a break in the connection too, but now we're going to break into the thought and read Matthew 6:33. We are going to finish this talk. Okay, so listen up, everybody out there. Matthew 6:33. But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. Reminders before the reward. You know what it says in Matthew 24:13. He that endures to the end shall be saved. So to those of you who listen to the end of this talk, good on you. Okay? This is the beginning of the Sabbath and also the sixth day of this festival. Later on the Sabbath, there'll be a Sabbath service at 3 p.m. Eastern time. And I hope many of you will be listening live at that time or can pick it up, at your convenience. And then on Sunday, Hoshana Rabbah, the seventh day of this festival, first day of the new week, we're going to have a service at 10:30 Eastern time. And I'm going to, if I need to instruct you any further, there'll be instructions available. But as far as I know, if you go to the website, thinkgod.org. Pardon? All right.
Sorry, the internet's been really weird.
It's all right.
Okay, go ahead.
But if you go to the website, thinkgod.org, I believe by now there are instructions to help you if you want to involve yourself in the talk on Sunday. It's an interactive talk. So actually people are going to be listening and then able to talk to me and ask questions right then at that moment. It's a seminar type talk, evidently, using a GoToMeeting type program. I don't think that's the actual program, but similar to that GoToMeeting program. So that's going to be on Sunday, but tomorrow will be the standard CCK153 webcast that will be at 3 p.m. Eastern time. Then Sunday we're going to be at 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. So enjoy this festival and enjoy this Holy Sabbath day. All the best to you. But let me know before I'm finished. There is something I need to talk about. The other day, I was thinking about Bermuda, but actually the storm hadn't gone that far north. It really hit the Bahamas very, very intensely. There have been several festivals of tabernacles where we've been in the Bahamas. We have spent several festivals of tabernacles in the Bahamas, not the entire festival, but parts of, I think, at least three different ones, where we've spent some time in the Bahamas. And that area now, I would imagine, is now recovering from pretty intense a pretty intense hurricane that went through there. So please keep the Bahamas in your prayers and keep praying for the east coast of the U.S. Evidently, the storm is not going to be hitting it that hard as far as we know right now. So keep praying that the storm will be moderate, ameliorated as it passes through the eastern coast of the U.S. and so it doesn't disrupt life in that area. So in the meantime, all the best to you and yours.